a slideshow person. I apologize for that. I can use a computer, and I did this in like 20 minutes, so that's all I can do.
Thank you so much for coming.
You're welcome. So I am a paramedic. I work over on the other side of Snoqualmie Pass, over in a town called Cleon. So I work in a rural area. I see a lot of motorcycle wrecks, see a lot of other wrecks. I see all kinds of nasty things that happen in the human body. I've been a paramedic for probably 6 years, an EMT for 2 years before that. So why did I want to do this? Partly because I ride a motorcycle. You guys ride motorcycles. Years ago, James Dean was asked to do a public service announcement for Drive 55 to Stay Alive. And James Dean was notorious for ad-libbing, and so he was filming the PSA in the very end. He was supposed to say, "Drive 55 because you might save a life." And he said, "Drive 55 and drive safe because the life you save might be mine." So we ride together. I want to know that you guys know what to do if I should get hurt. And I'm not even being hurt because I don't ride that well.
All about Kim.
Right? It's all about me. But more importantly, it's all about doing what you guys can do. Some of what I'm trying to teach you is a little bit on the ghetto side. It's going to be what you would know to do if you're out of a cell service area. That means put your shoulder back in place, put your kneecap back in place, put your finger back in place, stop your bleeding, and figure out what to do, how to safely remove a helmet, and how to do stuff like that. So has anybody here taken CPR first aid before? So pretty much everybody. Good for you. So you guys know the basics, how to wrap a bandage, how to do CPR, stuff like that. Has anybody done CPR recently?
8th grade.
Oh my god. But you look like you're 16, so
I'm a senior this year, so.
Yeah.
It's been a while.
So CPR's changed a little bit in terms of, I think, it's like you pump on the chest 30 times and you're supposed to blow in the mouth twice.
Yeah, it's 32.
The other thing that they changed was, if you don't want to blow in some stranger's mouth who may or may not have some communicable disease that you do not wish to get, or bad teeth, or bad food that they just ate, you don't have to blow anymore. All you have to do is push. So pump and blow. It's really simple. It's got a sexual connotation. Pump and blow. Pump and blow. You can always remember things like that. So when they say to pump on the chest, they're like, it used to be find the little sternal notch or the little notch and then follow the rib cage and blah, 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 blah. They don't do that anymore. You're going to go in between the nipple line. You can find the nipple line on anybody. Skinny, fat, not, whatever. You can find the nipple line. So they tell you to put the hands on the sternum right in between your nipples. That's all you got to aim for. You can pretty much tell somebody's nipple line even if they're wearing a jacket. Your best course of action, if you're riding and somebody's down and you shake and shout and they don't move and they just crashed for whatever reason without hitting something, chances are the heart stops. So usually they'll say, check for a pulse. Well, sometimes that's not that simple. Sometimes it's really hard for people. It's actually really hard in my field to find a pulse, yes.
You can hit me later if you're on a roll, but shake and shout? Like, what if you think somebody's got a spinal?
You're not going to shake that hard. You can punch him, you can pinch him. There's a couple things you're going to do to invoke pain on somebody. One is called a sternal rub. So you take your knuckles and you rub it on their sternum pretty hard. This will not do anything to their spine. So you could do it on yourself and push as hard as you want right now, and that kind of hurts. Let me tell you what we do in the field. We like put our body weight into it, and we're like, wake up! The other thing you can do is pinch somebody in the back of their arms here. That hurts quite a bit. Through a motorcycle jacket, your best course of action is to lift your jacket down, do a sternal rub. If that doesn't wake them up, then they're either faking it or they're dead. So unzip the jacket. It's your best course of action. They used to say, and you'll see it in that photo, it's like they want you to interlace your fingers and pull your fingers back while you're doing CPR on somebody so that your hand, only thing touching the chest is the palm. Forget about that. Just stick your hands on the chest in whatever manner is comfortable for you and push. You're going to have your arms locked out when you're doing this. It's not like this like you see in TV. This is not CPR. Your arms are locked out and you're pushing. And what you're doing is you're going to be on your knees too, right? So what you're doing is kind of a motion like this. Straight down. You want to push 100 times in a minute. So 100 times in a minute is more than one per second. So what they say is, memorize the Bee Gees song. Stay in line, the whole uh-huh part, that's supposed to be the perfect CPR compression ratio. So if you ever have to do CPR, just sit there and sing the BG Stay in Alaskan and you'll be fine. They want you to push 2 inches deep, 5 centimeters. How much is 2 inches when you push down? How do you know when you're doing that on top of a body?
That's intense. That's deep.
It's pretty intense. But what you don't know is you don't know how deep 2 inches when you're pushing downward from an upward position on people who have different varying sizes. Like 2 inches is different on me than 2 inches is going to be on, say, somebody bigger than I am. So what you don't want to do is squish the heart out the backside of the chest. You want to push it down 2 inches. If you push down too far, that's okay. You're still compressing the heart and you're still making it breathe. But if you don't push deep enough, you're not going to get the heart to pump. And what we want to do is perfuse the brain. The heart pumps around, it's moving the oxygen. So then the brain's going to be fine. So, okay, and the whole blow part. They say if you don't have a mask, you're supposed to pinch the nose, tilt the head back, and blow into the mouth. So usually you do 30 pumps, and then you blow in the mouth twice. If you have two people, you have one person who does the blow part, one person who does the pump part, and then you're supposed to switch. Generally, you switch every 2 minutes. They've done studies that show after 2 minutes, I don't care how buff you are, I don't care how strong you are, I don't care how awesome you are, after 2 minutes, your CPR compressions get bad. So they want you to switch it out every 2 minutes. Do the best that you can to switch things out. Yes.
How long can you perform CPR?
A long time. We can go hours.
Shut up. Okay.
Recently, there was a story about a kid who, maybe it was about 2 years ago now. He was he had a heart disease. He was out climbing somewhere in the mountains, backpacking with his high school buddies. He collapsed. His buddies did CPR for like 30 minutes before the medics arrived. And then the medics took over, and then they had to do some more stuff. I've heard about people going for 3 hours, 6 hours, as long as there's continuous CPR and you get oxygen in there, it's enough to keep them alive until they can get drugs or something else or an electrical shock that will put their heart back in order to pump on its own. So as far as the blow part, you can buy CPR masks. My recommendation, so they make all kinds, and I didn't bring any of the ones I had. I used to steal them. So that's my recommendation to you. Wherever you work, there's a first aid kit. You go in the first aid kit, and there's usually boxes, and they're all labeled. This is gauze pads, alcohol wipes, CPR masks, band-aids. Steal the CPR mask one, because you know what happens? Every week or 2 weeks or 1 month, somebody comes along and they refill those boxes. So you could steal one a month and you'd be fine. So my recommendation, honestly, that's where I get like the whole ghetto part is steal the shit from work and nobody's going to know. But they're little plastic masks. Some of them are more durable. Some of them are less durable. But they're good enough. They're lightweight. They're very easy to keep in your kit. Ian's probably got one in his kit that we can kind of bust out when we start looking at kits. I've got more fancy ones. But if you're worried, so what are you worried about in somebody's blood? The two things that's going to kill you.
AIDS and the
herp? Yes, actually it's HIV, which leads to AIDS, and then not herp, but hepatitis. The one that we're afraid of, and I was told by medical professionals, if you're going to be worried about something that's in somebody's blood, be more worried about hepatitis than HIV. Hepatitis can live outside the human body for, I think it is like 7 to 10 days. On blood, on clothing. So if you have a cut and then you kind of like wipe it around on something that had blood on it from somebody else, you could potentially get hepatitis, which means no more beer, nothing that can damage your liver, you have to be on drugs forever, and you probably might die from it. Recovering from hepatitis is really hard. HIV may or may not lead to AIDS, but we worry about that. There can be blood in people's vomit. There can be blood in their spit. So that's what we're worried about when you talk about covering it up. So what could you use instead? If it's one of you guys, I would trust like somebody to say beforehand, I've got hepatitis, and it's no big deal. But you can use a shirt and put it over somebody and still get air in, but it's going to cover you enough from some things that may come. So sometimes when you do CPR, some people will vomit. It just shoves things right out of there. Sometimes there will be oral secretions that may have blood in them that are coming from their lungs. You can use saran wrap, kind of poke a little hole in it enough to get air in it. You
can totally have saran wrap in it.
A baggie, like a Ziploc baggie, something like that. I carry saran wrap everywhere. You can do amazing things with saran wrap.
Whoa. yeah, you can.
We'll talk later. But you can modify anything to make a CPR mask. If you don't want to do that, if it's one of you guys, I can trust that I can do whatever I want on you. But I also know what to do. But use a CPR mask if you have it. If you don't, just pump. If you're worried about blowing into their mouth or whatever you may catch, just make sure there's no blood coming out or vomit. There's a rule, if you vomit, I'm going to vomit, so.
If you're going to blow into somebody's mouth, what's the best way to position your head to open the airway out?
That depends on the, and so if you guys took the first aid Red Cross class before, if you don't have a head injury, they say you can take the chin and tilt it back while pinching their nose. If they have a head injury or you think they have caused any kind of damage to their spine, they want you to do a jaw thrust, which is to go right behind where your jaw is and push forward. And then you can kind of do stuff like that. The fear being that if you took somebody who came off their motorcycle and they tumbled a lot and now they've damaged their spine, that you doing this simple motion of tilting their head back could cause them to have permanent spinal damage resulting in Christopher Reeve-like status.
So can you do that with a helmet on? If they have a helmet on?
You have to take the helmet. If they need to breathe, or there's a problem with their airway, or you need to give them breaths, you have to take their helmet. Unless they got one of those cool flip-up helmets.
Yeah.
Then you could probably do it that way. Be a little harder, because helmets are pretty tight.
Yeah.
And for you to get your mouth around there, or even a mask, it might be a little harder. So, we can kind of go over that. Yes.
Is there any time when you would absolutely positively be like, nope, we're leaving that helmet on?
If you need to get them to breathe, take it off.
So what
if
about getting the helmet off safely?
We'll go over that, actually, because I'm sure everybody has a helmet. We can kind of walk over some stuff. Some people have different helmets than others. Some are really tight, some are really loose. It just sort of depends. But taking off a helmet is a big deal, but we'll kind of go over that as we have time. I do want to say, and I talked about this last time, should you go down or you see somebody in your group go down, There's several things that I, as a paramedic responder, do not want or do not care about in terms of your well-being, your health, or your ability to stay alive. If you have a tattoo that says, I have a medication allergy or I'm a diabetic, I don't notice that. I don't care. Do not tattoo things on your body like they tell you. Like, there's all these news stories about, oh, everybody's getting medical tattoos. No, we live in Seattle. 90% of Seattle is tattooed in some way, shape, form, or another. I don't look for tattoos. Some people actually tattoo across their chest, do not resuscitate. We ignore that because it's not legal. So please don't try to tattoo anything on your body that indicates what your medical stuff is. There is another thing going around that people are like, have you heard of ICE in case of emergency? You're supposed to put it on your cell phone. Most smartphones lock, or people have them locked. And I will tell you that what I do as a medical professional, I don't care. I don't look at your cell phone, I'm trying to save your life. Let me tell you what the cop does on scene. They don't care either. They're merely there to fill out paperwork. And that's also if we can even find your cell phone. So we can't get into your cell phone. So if you put ICE in your cell phone, it's almost pointless. If you want to make sure that somebody knows what to do, put a card in your wallet or in your jacket or upon your person in a very obvious place that says, in case of emergency, call Lucretia. So, and what your medications are and your allergies and what your medical history is. So don't tattoo things, don't put ice in your phone.
What about the, a lot of bicycles wear the wristband and the ankle band?
I just saw one of those the other day and it says who they are and who to call them. To me it's just jewelry. Like, we are trained to look for medical bracelets, that's it. Medical necklaces and medical bracelets, and those have very specific insignias on them. Those are what we look for. Those bicyclist ones I just saw, I don't...
So you might not notice it, but,
I would think it's standard jewelry. But we do know to look for medical tags, but those medical tags are very clearly marked with the red stuff on it.
Yeah.
So would it be a good idea? I mean, even if I'm not allergic to anything but these things, would it be a good idea to have a medical alert ICE?
If you can maybe have a medical alert bracelet that says you're allergic to bees things, if you went down, maybe we might.
Really?
That
matters? Okay.
It'd be helpful.
Okay, cool. But what I was really asking was, like, contact shit. like, hey, this is who I am. This is a good number to call.
Yes. Put it upon your person somewhere. Usually, okay, I'll tell you where I check. These two side pockets and maybe your back pockets. Otherwise, I'm not rifling through your stuff. Neither are the cops.
You guys check wallets for that?
The hospitals. We will check a wallet. But here's where we look for wallets. Like, where do girls put wallets? Like, I have a wallet in my back pocket, but I'm like a teenage boy, so. Like, where do you girls put your wallets?
I put it in the inside pocket of my coat.
We might check an inside pocket. We generally check these two outside pockets. Where do you guys put your wallets?
In
your bag, so that's a bad idea.
Breast pocket.
Breast pocket is fine, like the breast pocket up there. Like,
it's really obvious it's there, you know, it's a little lost in there. So.
As long as it's in one of these side pockets up here, even on the, if we can pat you down and feel it, then we can get to that.
Yeah.
But then it has to be in a very clear space, because I've looked at a lot of people's wallets over time, and they're full of shit. Coffee cards, and library cards, and like, I've tried rifling through somebody's wallet. I'm like, oh my God, there's got to be something in here. But it just make it very clear and put it in a very obvious spot, and then that saves us time and saves a lot of hassle.
Where do you get a medical alert bracelet? Do I get that through my MD?
There are different
pharmacies.
I think you can just make
pharmacies.
Go online, and I think you can make one. Do you know the answer to that one?
Because
I know
places,
you're in search and rescue.
Yeah.
So.
A couple places online. You just got to go find some place that makes dog tags.
Oh.
I got a set of dog tags that I lace up in my boots, and that's got blood type, allergies, name, social, that kind of stuff.
So to that point, if you got a dog tag in your boot, are you looking?
Boot? Not as much, no.
Yeah, well, that's not so much for her. That's more for the corner. Yeah, the reason why you're wearing your boot is your boots are likely to stay attached to your feet.
Yeah.
So.
You go. Yeah, I've seen boots come off. Yeah.
I've seen boots stay on feet. I've seen feet not stay on people.
There you
so.
Go.
Dad. We don't know where he is, but we got his foot. And we know
he's not running far.
So that's your standard review of CPR. When in doubt, if somebody goes down in front of you, you're standing in line at the movie and somebody just collapses in front of you, if you shake and shout and they don't move, automatically start CPR. The damage that you will do doing CPR on somebody who still has a beating heart is way less than not doing it should they have no beating heart. So
it's a hedge.
Didn't you say that? In an urban setting, you said before, like that's really where you can dispense the blow. This is professionals will be on scene.
Yeah, like in our city setting, I mean, we're like three to 5 minutes. I think it's 3 minutes from an EMS agency, a fire department. So they're going to get there within 5 minutes. By the time they stop eating their dinner and stop watching their movie and put on their shoes and get out to the rig and get to you, 5 minutes may go by, but the amount of time that you're just sitting there doing your compressions on somebody, then somebody's going to be there. If you're out somewhere where your cell phone doesn't work, or in the case of where I work, it can take upwards, at minimum, sometimes it takes 30 minutes to get to you, sometimes over an hour. And it depends on where you're riding your bike. And that's just my little part of town, San Clio.
Search and rescue can take 4 to 8 hours.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, did you say 48 or 42?
48.
And sometimes longer, depending on what you're doing.
That's if it's actually escalated to search and rescue.
And see, that's the thing. First thing that happens is search and rescue doesn't deploy when bad things happen to you. Search and rescue deploys when we find out that something bad has happened. Somebody calls the cops. Cops call the sheriff. Sheriff says, we need to get search and rescue.
We think somebody's up in the mountains,
yeah,
and maybe we're not
cops
sure where they are.
Said, no, I don't see him anywhere. And then they go back in.
Or the fire department rolls out and goes, we're not walking up that. And then they call the relevant units. The relevant units have to mobilize the people. We wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning, stumble around looking for our shit. And then we get in the car, and then we have to drive out to Stevens Pass or out, you know, sometimes out towards Cle Elum. We'll get right to the edge of the county line sometimes. So by the time I'm actually on the ground over there, it's been hours at this point. And mind you, once we're there, the sheriff then has to put a tactical plan together. You know, we can't just go grab a random handful of people and just send them out of the woods. So once we're all staged, then they got the plan, they put it in action. So it can be hours before boots are on the ground out looking for you up in the hills.
So the moral of the story is be the fuck careful.
Yeah.
Well, one, yes, don't get hurt in the first place, you know, but right, you don't know when that elk is going to cross you in front of the highway.
Don't ride by yourself in the boonies.
Don't ride boonies there.
Well, that's partly true. Don't ride by yourself in the boonies, or at least ride by yourself within saw range, or you take that risk. But this is the point of life, right? We're supposed to take risks. People die in Mount Everest, and they're fine with that, because that's what they love to do. If we die in our motorcycles, I suppose maybe I'm okay with that, as long as it wasn't really painful. As long as it was, bam, we're done.
That was a sweet corner, not.
But you don't know when it's going to happen, but if you're out in the middle of nowhere, like, I've gone out to Nieuwe Bay a couple times by myself, and there are many times in which the cell phone no longer works. So, I mean, I know what to do, but if I go down because my heart stopped, or I can't take care of myself, then I'm lying on the side of the road, or in a ditch, or somewhere farther away by myself for quite a long time. But we'll go over a lot of that stuff. So CPR, if you watch somebody go down in front of you, by all means, start CPR. In the city, don't worry about breaths. If you're out with this club or any of your buddies and you're riding, breathe into them, because that oxygen will matter. But 100 a minute, just go with the Stayin' Alive song, and then switch it out as often as you can. There is something, I'll probably more send this in a video because we talked about it for too long last time. It's called a precordial thump. And it's sort of what happens if your heart stops. A lot of times it stops for high school students who play lacrosse because they got a lacrosse ball thrown at their sternum going about 100 miles an hour. That's enough force or whatever. I don't understand all that electricity, mass, force, velocity, whatever, to make your heart stop. So what they really need is another 100 mile an hour lacrosse ball thrown at their chest to restart their heart, or they need what's called an AED machine, which will shock them. But sometimes you can get away with punching somebody in the chest really, really hard, and it's enough of a force to turn their heart back.
How the fuck do you know when to do that?
If you watch them go down directly in front of you and you check for a heartbeat and they don't have one, I would punch you in the chest as hard as I could. And I mean hard. Because it's got to be the equivalent of like a 100 mile an hour lacrosse ball. But I'll send you a video. So nothing that I'm going to teach you is anything that you cannot learn by Googling shit on the internet. Just so you know. I'm not a doctor. I'm not here to tell you what to do. But just so you know, everything I'm going to teach you is available.
So you didn't make this shit up like 15 minutes ago, that's what you're saying?
No, I didn't like walk in and start drinking beer and go, oh, I'm going to make shit up. So, here's the important thing, right? 1 minute, how long can the brain go without oxygen? 1 minute, well, you know, you'll still be all right. 3 minutes later, well, not so all right. 10 minutes later, you know, you might drool for the rest of your life. 15 minutes later, they pull the plug. Or a family member pulls the plug. And we'll talk about it at the very end about pulling the plug. But if you had, like, I can go on scene after somebody's been down for 30 minutes, and we can do CPR, and I can give you all these drugs, and we can get your heartbeat back, and I can make your heartbeat look identical to mine, a perfectly normal heart. But you've lost oxygen to the brain, so there's nothing left. Your brain dead. So how long do you want to live like that is one question, but then any possible recovery for quality of life is gone. So when you're in the city, you know, you could do 3 minutes of CPR and then the fire department will be there and then they'll take over and somebody may have a chance of surviving fairly well. If you guys are out riding and you're 2 hours away or 30 minutes away from anything, you got to do CPR for a while, pump and blow, best you can. If it's hot, so here's the thing, like, a lot of my coworkers get in the ambulance and they're doing CPR and they've got their, like, sweaters on. I'm like, well, no wonder you're sweating to death, and no wonder you can't do CPR anymore. Take off some clothing. Take off your jackets.
I'm sorry, what was the compression to blow ratio?
You want to do 30 compressions, 2 blows. If you forget, just pump and blow whenever you feel like it. Like, honestly, people can't remember those digits, so just pump and blow. If you're like pumping, oh shit, I didn't blow lately, then stop. If you have 2 people there, hopefully one person's like counting. So they tell you to count out loud. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Do what you can. It doesn't always work that way. Also, too, just for scene safety, if you're riding and you're either with 2 people or 10 people, My advice to you is designate one person to deal with the EMS responders. So that one person is going to be the person to make the phone call. That one person is going to be the one talking to 911 and looking around and seeing what's happening. And then designate another person to protect you guys, to position your bikes in a way that's going to protect you, or to like bust out flares. I mean, those are kind of heavy and big to take on a motorcycle ride, but do what you can to protect you from the oncoming traffic, because let me tell you, they will not see you. They already don't see us. You can put on a big orange suit and they still don't see us. So do your best to protect that scene. Position your bikes in whatever way you can to protect whatever is crashed. So just remember, the quicker you start doing CPR, don't muck around. If they're kind of doing this like, start CPR. That's not breathing.
So if you're doing the fish on dry land, just go for it.
If you're doing, yeah, we call it guppy breathing. If you're doing that fish on dry land, go for it. You're not going to cause any harm.